You are listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church, located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to westhill.net/donate.
To acknowledge that we're on the traditional territory of the Mississaugas and of the New Credit First Nations lands, lands which were previously occupied by the Seneca and Huron Wendat First Nations. Welcome to all of you, you who are regular, you who are visiting.
I'm wanting to ask you to put November 2nd on your calendars. Christopher Levan, one of my colleagues, approached Presbytery, many of you will know, last January, asking for a colloquy. And that, our Toronto one, is taking place on Thursday, November the 2nd. It will be all day from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. with a keynote address at 7:30. I think that might be by me, but I'm not really sure. But it's an important element of the conversation because since it is a colloquy, Christopher is collecting what happens at those things, and he is sharing that then with the presbytery. So the presbytery will get a very good report of what goes on the 2nd of November, and your voices are important there. He was also present in Fredericton when I was there this week and took note of what was offered there as well. So the report of those conversations will be going forward. I noted last week that we had booked another conversation in Montreal for October 25th, and he will also be at that. So that will be at least three conversations that Christopher will be taking the information from and sharing it with the presbytery. So I do urge you to be there if you can. Again, that's all day, Thursday, November 2nd, from 10 to 4, and then again at 7:30 in the evening. Thank you. Oh, my apologies. At College Street United Church, which is at the corner of College and Bathurst.
Simple instructions is a phrase open to interpretation. How many here, we're still sort of summering, but I'm looking, how many were ever involved over the years in a Vision Works conversation? There we are. Excellent. When we set about to relook at what is important about how we live with each other, we tried to find at least a single fact. And churches throughout history have told us what those facts ought to be. But we thought we'd look for it ourselves and find out what could we absolutely say to anyone in the world, and it would be a fact we could ground the rest of everything in. What would be the solid rock underneath? And we explored, and statements came out, and, well, I don't believe that, or I do believe it. We came down to that one thing that we like to emphasize, and that's that life is a web of interconnections. Each piece has an impact on another piece. You have an impact on all sorts of pieces, and all sorts of pieces of life have an impact on you. That was our ground. That was the fact we couldn't budge from. That was a fact. You could say, well, love is a good way to live. That's a fact. And it's not a fact. It's a belief and an opinion. So we grounded ourselves in a fact. Life is interconnected. And then we asked the question, what shall guide us in this fact? And that's when we made not a fact, but a choice to say we want to live that interconnected life lovingly, compassionately, justly. That's the choice part. And I have to make it sometimes every 4 minutes because I stray from those thoughts and I get wrapped up in my life. So life is interconnected. I have an impact. Something's impacting me. How will I live? How shall I live? Sounds better. How shall I live lovingly? And you help me with that, and every book I read helps me with that, even if I disagree with the book, because I'm looking for wisdom to live that life more lovingly. So that's what we do, and I'm just going to...
The first reading this morning is taken from a book by Noam Chomsky, who writes about two views on irrational belief. And it's very much an on the one hand situation and on the other hand situation. I am a child of the Enlightenment. I think irrational belief is a dangerous phenomenon. And I try consciously to avoid irrational belief. On the other hand, I certainly recognize that it's a major phenomenon for people in general. And you can understand why it would be. It does, apparently, provide personal sustenance, but also bonds of association and solidarity, and a means for expressing elements of one's personality that are often very valuable elements. To many people, it does that. In my view, there's nothing wrong with that. And then we have these words from Brené Brown, who was baptized an Episcopalian, brought up as a Roman Catholic, left the church for 2 decades, and then returned. I define connection as the energy that exists between people when they feel seen, heard, and valued. When they can give and receive without judgment. And when they derive sustenance and strength from the relationship. These words offered as wisdom for the journey.
I got a letter today in my mailbox from the licensing firm for using other music, and you have to have it licensed, you have to pay for a license, and I just put it in the garbage because we have such incredible music that we use here, which is the gift of Richard Scott Kearns, and I don't need any of that other stuff. So I told Scott this morning, I rarely do this, but I told him this is going to be one rockin' sermon if I manage to remember it all. So I have my notes with me, and I may look down from time to time, because I think it's important. I think there are important things I need to say today. And I'm going to have a hard time saying them. That's funny. Not really. My first line that I wrote is, this is very possibly the very last time that I will preside over a worldwide communion table with you. Having been able to do that for over 20 years and been able to bring you into that connection with every other Christian church around the world, it has been a privilege. And we have moved through so many iterations of how we do this that few of you will remember all of them. When I arrived, the congregation had moved into a very personally focused communion where people came to the front and bread and juice was distributed from the front. That was a shift from the traditional way of doing communion in the United Church, where everyone was given the elements in their pews, and then everyone took it as a community, recognizing the communal nature of what it was we did together. The bringing, coming forward and taking it by intinction, dipping the bread in a cup, was a more sacramental way, the tradition that came out of the more sacramental churches, the Anglicans and the Catholics, a much more personal idea about what communion was about. But it had become a beautiful practice here at West Hill. Over the course of time, we have done it at Maundy Thursday services by circling a number of cups and loaves of bread through the community as we finished. And we have arrived at the way we do it now, which is a reflection of how the early communities would have come together, not necessarily with the bread all on the table at the front, but the idea that the food was brought in by a vast host of people, by those who were wealthy, who may have sponsored the entire feast, or those who brought just what they could and placed it on the table, knowing that it would be appreciated and welcomed just like anything else that had been brought to that table. And so we bring our foods from our traditions and from our homes, and we all place them on these tables as we move into communion after our reception of new members later in the service. It has been a trajectory that has brought us back to community, back to what it is that community has been for us, back to who it is we see ourselves to be within that community. So one of the first things I did was look up the definition of the word communion. And there are a number of things, of course, something about the Christian sacrament and something about a group like the Anglican Communion, a group of churches that identify as one. But the one that resonated with me was that it is an act or an instance of sharing. It's when we come together and we share something with someone else. We are in communion with that person. And so that's what we do here. It's kind of verb-like rather than noun-like. It's about being as we are together and what it is that we are doing together, a very active thing. We bring ourselves into a space and become attentive, become intimately aware of one another and what it is that we're doing. Here at West Hill, I've often spoken about West Hill as being that recognition of what we do when we gather as members in this place, when we join through baptism or through a transfer of membership or through a profession of faith, whatever that might be to the individual who comes up here to the front, as some will do later in the service. We make a commitment to one another, to be with one another, to stand by one another, to be present in times of good and times of bad, to open our hearts to one another and let people in. Even if they're people who irritate our hearts, we let them in. We become community. We acknowledge that during those moments. And then when we gather together for communion, it's when we're reminding ourselves, this is what we do. When we're at a table together, we get to know one another. We look in one another's eyes in a way that we often don't in the course of our everyday lives. But at a table, we expose the truths of ourselves to one another. We become more intimate. We share who we are. So in communion here, we pledge ourselves once again to one another and to the gifts that we are to each other. Worldwide communion, then, is that instance of sharing together around the world, Christian communities around the world, recognizing that this is an important thing for many different reasons, for many different communities, but a recognition that we are together with people around the globe seeking this sustenance and what it means to us. I want to talk today predominantly, though, about ecclesia. Ecclesia is the word that's used mostly in the New Testament to talk about what these communities were about. It's translated as church in almost every translation of the Bible. But the word ecclesia had kind of a different meaning than church. Church was a completely different word, which is also used in the New Testament and can rightly be translated as church. But ecclesia wasn't really about church or what we think church as being. It was a governmental assembly of people. It was the people coming together to organize, to rule, to set out the rights and the wrongs. It was a group of people coming together to acknowledge their truths and how they should be lived out, to guide each other in that by coming together and creating that opportunity to be that. That's why those New Testament communities were so dangerous. It wasn't because they were churches or congregations or because they came together and had a meal. It's because they had the audacity to say, we're better than that. We don't want to live according to whatever system you have in place. We don't want to live according to, you know, the system that we have here in our own country or the one that's imposed upon us by someone else. We think we know how to be together in a better way. We think we know how to hold one another. We think we know how to treat one another. We think we know how to make laws that will bind us together better than whatever it is you've put together before. And we are committing to one another to do that. We're going to do that till the end of time. They believed that they had the right to do that because they had identified someone who had a better understanding of humanity and who drove that into the language of the day around divinity so significantly that the people found themselves rooted in all that the world was ordered about, found themselves rooted in the deepest truths of humanity, truths that they called divine, that they projected upon a divine being in order to help people recognize these are bloody important. Don't let them go. Don't let them slip away. Don't let them fall under whatever that order of government is. We will call them out amongst us. We will be ecclesia. And we will live those truths out to a person. We will bind ourselves together and live in harmony and love and commitment to those beliefs. The United Church of Canada was founded by an act of parliament that brought it into being in 1925. And because it was a church, it was given permission to be an ecclesia. It was given permission to operate differently than some of the laws of the land. It was given permission to do that because how it ordered itself and the way in which it was going to function within society were better, maybe, than what the rest of the government wanted to do. It was given the right to set its own rules by how it would behave, how its members would behave with one another, how it would be in the world and what it would do, its outreach and its work and the reasons that it brought people together and the way that they gathered. All of that would be protected under this new act. And they could shift and change things and change their doctrine and change the way they wanted to meet and all those kinds of things. But it was given the permission to do that by the government. And it saw its permission as setting it apart in a way that didn't mean it could break the laws of the land, but that meant that it was better than some of those laws of the land. That it would challenge one another to love and to be in relationship in a better way than those laws of the land, which prevent us from doing bad things to each other, but don't tell us we need to be good to one another. Those laws of the land don't legislate kindness or goodness or honesty. They legislate those things that keep us from harming one another. They set up ways that protect us. But the laws of the ecclesia, the laws of the United Church of Canada, helped us understand how to love one another. They challenged us to live that out in the way that we were. They told us that at a meeting, you don't vote like this, you raise your hand because you have the courage to speak your convictions, because you want to witness to what you think is truth, because you want to show everybody that this is what you think is right. It invited us to do that, and it challenged us to do those things in a new way. It was an incredible moment in time. The first major Protestant denomination in the country, a coming together of three that had had their own little things going on before that, but it came together in that one moment. We believed we had higher principles than the community around us. We believed we could make stronger bonds between the people in those community. We believed our rules of engagement were equal to or better than those of the government, and that they were at least equal to what was being offered in those court systems. So now I want to back up a little bit and talk about the definition of community, which I looked up as well this morning. It identifies as a social, religious, occupational, or other group sharing common characteristics or interests and perceived or perceiving itself as distinct in some respect from the larger society within which it exists, usually preceded by the, as in the church, the business community, the. We perceive ourselves differently from the community around us. Group dynamics tells us, and research tells us, that churches that differentiate themselves extremely from the community around them are tighter knit, stronger, will outlast many of the other things, that those with just kind of a loose differentiation, that those with a loose differentiation won't last, right? That there's not enough to distinguish them from the rest of society, so why would anyone come? That may be the truth, but I think that we still have much that distinguishes us from the everyday life that goes on around there. We're not enough that we should be proud of ourselves, because there's stuff going on out there which is absolutely incredible, way beyond what any of us might even have the capacity to imagine, let alone bring about. There's all kinds of great stuff going out there, but we gather together each week to remind ourselves that we are that extraordinary community that bonds one to the other, that cares for each other, and that takes us beyond this place. And now I want to talk about the United Church as ecclesia in a different way. Because, and I haven't talked about this from this place very often. I talk with you about what's going on in the church regularly in the off-church hours. But I want to talk about what's happening to the church now, as we're seeing it happen here, as I'm feeling it happen as an individual who has its sights set, upon whose sights it has been set, or something like that. Grammar is beyond me at this moment. But I think that what we're going through as a church is a breakdown of ecclesia. I think we're, as a church, we're experiencing the loss of that gift that we were given by Parliament back in 1925. A loss of that gift that we were given by the New Testament, who identified us as something extraordinary, something over and above what happened everywhere else. I think that there's been a breakdown of ecclesia in the United Church, and we're experiencing the hell of that. And it's come about through a number of ways. I think the greatest of which has been perhaps the complexity of life. Things aren't as easy as they were before, as Shelley noted, just simply about getting a job is so much harder now. And people who do get jobs often, construct their careers of 7 or 8 of them rather than one long progression to the accumulation of what it was you were called to do. I think maybe that complexity of life has undermined some of it. A shift toward a more conservative articulation of our faith, I think, is part of it. But I think perhaps one of the greatest elements of it is the fact that back in the 1960s and 70s, when we were embracing progressive concepts, we forgot that the language that we used to identify ourselves wasn't just prescribed ecclesia language. It couldn't be just that. It had to be more. It had to actually engage individuals and challenge them to live out those bonds of ecclesia. It had to create relationships that were built upon the very things that we talked about. And our language was so important in that. And instead, we started thinking that our language was important because, like ecclesia, it was a distinctive term that would identify us over and above, over and against the rest of society. That the idea of salvation and resurrection and ascension and communion and God and Jesus and the Spirit and the Trinity and a whole list of things, that they made us extraordinary. That language depicted our difference between us and the rest of society. And I think that was a mistake. You know, I think that was a mistake. Because what made us extraordinary wasn't our language. It was who we were and what we did. It was the possibility of relationship and the welcoming of that, and it's the heartbeat added to it that made it something beautiful, something extraordinary. And I think that we've squandered that because we didn't think clearly enough about who we were. We didn't think about it soon enough to be able to capture what we were for coming generations. And so now we're a church that's made up primarily of people who are 60 or older. I'm being generous there. Primarily 60 or older, who come to church, I believe, because in the 1960s and 70s, they fell in love with being together. That being in community was something that was so important to them that they couldn't care less what was said on the Sunday morning. They just wanted to be with one another. Who completely missed the fact that the minister didn't mean most of the things that they were saying in those words. They meant some new understanding, some new eloquent definition of what those terms meant. That when they preached about salvation, it wasn't, you know, salvation that would take you to heaven instead of that, where is it that the finally impenitent go? Oh yeah, eternal damnation, Article 19 in the Basis of Union. The finally impenitent shall be cast into eternal damnation. No minister in the United Church of Canada believed that, at least not when I was ordained. If we were talking about salvation, it wasn't saving you from that. It was bringing you out of isolation. It was connecting you with people that you loved. It was strengthening who you were so that you could be in the world in a way that would strengthen the world. That's what salvation was. But because the people in the pews weren't told that's what that was, except maybe every other, you know, Pentecost Sunday, I don't know. They thought that salvation still meant some peculiar relationship that believers have with God through Jesus Christ, and that it was exclusive to a certain amount of people. And who in today's world really wants to believe that? Unless they're people who are very, very afraid. And we have reason to be very, very afraid. So while what has been unfolding here in the United Church in my review, we've thought that it was a turning toward belief. We thought it was a raising the creed over just what it is to be here and be together. But I don't know that that's true. I think it's a breakdown of ecclesia. I think the creed is simply a tool that is used because our ecclesia doesn't work anymore. We can't get enough people together who actually understand what the church is about to make reasonable decisions. We can't get enough people together to even talk about what ecclesia is supposed to be in this day and age. We can't get enough people together who know or understand or are impassioned by that conversation. And so ecclesia doesn't function anymore. We have no right to identify ourselves as something that is greater than the world around us, that is greater than the system of government that offered us that gift. We have no right to claim that any longer. And yet, we will pretend that we do until we take our dying breath. I'm hoping that what happened this past week in Nova Scotia and in New Brunswick is a little bit of a revisioning of ecclesia. I'm not terribly optimistic that it will infiltrate the entire church. It happened in Edmonton a few weeks before, and I think it'll happen in the UK, though that has nothing to do with the United Church. In the few weeks as we gather there, it's not because of me or Scott, or it's because of you, which is why I'm so pleased, Don, that this morning you talked about West Hill. It's because of who we are here and what we do. In Shelburne, Nova Scotia, Lois and Keith McGinnis, who have been members of this congregation for so long, joined us to talk with that community there to bring a little bit of who West Hill was and answer some of their questions. And over and over and over again, Keith McGinnis, talked about how much he missed the fellowship of this place, how much he missed with being with people, sharing with people deeply on the board, engaging in ways that were important to him. He mentioned it over and again. They can't go back to the church down there. And in Fredericton, we watched a group of people gather, many of them clergy, many of them from many different places. Oh, Shelburne, by the way, had representatives from every single congregation in the presbytery at that meeting. The presbytery even helped pay for it. Who knew? In New Brunswick, it was a collection of people from all over that province as well, and a couple from Maine who had come up for the time as well. People who wanted to engage around how it is that you do this thing, how you bring people together and talk about goodness and beauty and truth, and how somehow in that binding together of those principles, people's hearts were bound together. And they were changed, and they changed the world. They wanted to know how that was done, and they were enthusiastic, and they were welcoming. Babette and Deb were in Fredericton, and they were the most articulate, beautiful representations of what it is that West Hill offers. They gave so much to that community as they spoke about who we are and what it is that we offer and how we challenge and change and commit and convict and edify and speak to one another about how we want to live together, how we want to be together. They didn't have the word ecclesia, but we could so have used it because it was clearly what it was about while we were down there. I want us to be better than anything that's out there. I want us to be more. I want us to be broad. I don't want us to forget what we've been through. I don't want us to lose sight of our roots. I don't want us to walk away from that idea that was so powerful way back then, that was hidden under the word church, that if you pulled it out, you'd see it was a government. It was a government of the people that called the people to something greater and something better. I want us to be that. Today, we're welcoming new members to West Hill. All of you who have become members in the past, I'm sorry to say, unless you were members long before I arrived, you're probably not technically members, because I haven't used the Trinitarian formula, which I have been reminded is important for membership. But I think you all still feel members, don't you? Don't you still feel members of the church, even though we didn't use that Trinitarian formula? I'm not going to use it today either. So those of you who are going to come up and be part of that process, and you don't have to have told me you're going to do it in advance, because there's nothing magical happening for which you needed to be forewarned or prepared. We're simply demonstrating a commitment to this place, a commitment to ecclesia. If it's only in this place, it's worth committing to. And so I'll invite you forward, and I'll invite the congregation to come, and we'll pass that on, and we'll make a commitment to one another. And then we'll share in a meal in the same way those communities did long ago, in a recognition that they were there for extraordinary purposes. They were called to unbelievable tasks, and they together could make that happen. So on this Sunday, which may be my last Worldwide Communion Sunday, I want us to raise the concept of ecclesia, of being together in that extraordinary way, to lift it before us today and hold it before us as we move forward into whatever it is the future brings. You are the people, and you have the right to call yourself to your own concept of how life should be lived out in community. I'm going to do this part of the communion now, and I'll read our prayer later and invite you to the meal later. But it feels right now to uncover this, because this is the way that people gathered together long ago. It was simple. It was never anything very extravagant, I don't imagine. But it was brought and made by human hands that loved one another and that found shelter in one another. It was brought together in ways that, in tearing apart food to share, placed it within each person present, offered it to each of them, and said, as this goes into you, you're recognized as part of the whole, because that's how this came together, and that's how we're called to be, part of the whole, part of what community can be, regardless of what anyone might say about us. And now I'll invite you to come together, those of you who are going to become members in the church or express your support and commitment to the church, to just come forward and join me up here on the front of the dais. Yes, come up here, please, and face the congregation. You're going to be saying some words and answering some questions I have. And those questions, some of them will show up on the front. So anyone who, if you can participate, I invite you to join us when it becomes that time. I've spoken to you about who it is we are. We are Ecclesia. We are a group of beings who wants to hold accountability in this space, hold ourselves accountable to one another, and do that according to the principles that we have in our document called Vision Works, that call us to love, to care, to conscientious reflection, to challenging one another, to a greater participation in whatever ways we are capable of doing. And so I celebrate that you have come here to become part of that, to acknowledge your presence as part of that, and to become a piece of who our family is. I'm going to ask you a couple of questions, and then the community will join us. Do you wish to join us on this compelling journey through life, developing, nurturing, and sustaining for yourself a reverence for life, a deep commitment to its interconnectedness, a willingness to be guided by love and to grow in wisdom, a commitment to those things, and an appreciation of what it is that we do in this place? If so, please say, I do. Will you open yourself to the creative energy of love as you journey, even and especially when it may open before you a path you had never dreamed or planned to follow? If so, please say, I will. And are you willing to share with us your joy and reach out with us in love? If so, please say, I am. Would the community please stand? We gather in community to offer our gifts to one another as we share our journeys of transformation. It is in community we learn who we truly are. In community we come to honor the otherness of those who travel with us. In community we become bound to one another by a connection deeper than words. Please join me. In this community, we share our common desire, seek truth, to create goodness, and to celebrate beauty in ourselves, in others, and in the world. We celebrate these journeys of transformation upon which we each embark at birth and throughout which we might come to love ourselves, one another, and the whole of life. The font and the water in it, the tree, its roots, rings, the leaves upon it, are symbols of our community, the commonality. We've got another slide there? That's all right, we've just got one person back there. Oh, not there, okay. The commonality of this are symbols of our community, the commonality of our needs, and the truth that we all are part of the rhythms of this planet. Through water we are born, of water we are made, by water we are sustained. Into life we are born, by life we are transformed, throughout life we are all connected. We do not walk alone. Each of you, whole and loved, yet knows the need for support and care upon this journey of transformation. As these individuals gather to commit to the journey, let us pledge our care to them. We stand as witnesses to the commitment these people make to a journey of transformation and pledge ourselves through the symbol of this water and the ribbons upon the tree to their love, support, and care as they discover and explore their place both in this community of love and in the wider world. I invite you to be seated. Oh, no, I'm not inviting you to be seated. Would those who would be willing to come forward and place their hands as a symbol of support and care upon those who make the commitment here today, please come forward. I'm going to invite you to come down and now stand looking this way. You'll have to make your way in around the table, but as closely as you can. Collect. We celebrate your being in this space, the gift that you are to this community, the joy and the tears that you offer here that are so truthful and so beautiful. May they be symbols for us of how we can be together in community, and may we grow in your wisdom and in an understanding of life through your eyes. Welcome. Cynthia, your journey has been such a long journey, and here may you find home. May you find in this place a welcome for your heart. And may that heart, which has learned and felt and explored so much, be present to all of us that we might grow through what it is you have to offer us in this engagement. May it be a long and healthy journey. And may you feel the love of this place, this home. Sheila, yours too has been a long journey, shared for so long by so many people who loved and held you, who offered you joy and delight and gave you community in a way that was not available in other places. And it has taken much courage to be here today. As we witness that courage, may we grow strengthened by it. May we feel the cost that being here is to you. May we honor that cost, and may we be the companions that you need on this journey. From this day forward, welcome. Thomas, your gift is one of the vision of youth, and we so need to see the world as you see it. And so as you join us here, we ask that you never be silent about what it is you see in this place. Speak to us of who you see us to be. Be honest about that, so that we might grow and reflect the care and the concerns and the values that you hold in your heart. May they be ours, and may you speak them truthfully to us. Welcome. Catherine, welcome to this place. Welcome to this home. May we offer you the gift of companionship, the courage, the strength, whatever it is that you need. For we know that we will lean upon you for those same things. And in that journey back and forth, all of those will be enriched and brightened by the relationship that we build. May you find home here, and may we offer you those things that are so beautifully offered by you. Look, Ken, this journey has been one of joy, getting to know you and watching you embraced by this community, even as you sought to embrace them, strengthening that relationship each time you came into this space. May the gift that you offer here be taken far beyond, and the gifts that you give beyond this place, touching and speaking to and embracing people who will never come in this building. But you carry that ecclesia in your heart, and may you share it with them deeply and richly. Welcome. I give you thanks for being present in this place, for sharing your strength with those who join this community. And as we move forward, brave citizens of this ecclesia, may we stand strong upon the love and faith that has come from you all. We celebrate the gift that is this place. Amen. Amen. Thank you. Please. Thank you. Thank you. Catherine.
When you say the last communion, we're not losing you as our leader.
No, but I might not be allowed to do this once I'm not. Once. Not yet. The voice of youth. I'm going to read now our great thanksgivings, which reminds us that the world, once one continent, broke apart through forces that, you know, geologists could probably explain. But the human family also broke apart. And in our great thanksgivings, may we feel the courage to come once again together. You always accompany me so beautifully when I do this. Thank you. We stand a world apart from those in other lands who, too, bow their heads in full and ripened gratitude for satisfactions such as ours. Pains relieved, lessons learned, hopes renewed. Their eyes scan strange horizons, feet scuff their presence upon distant soils. The meaning of the words with which their thanks is lifted is locked in tongues we may not comprehend. Their gods don't rise before us. There are no deities to whom we offer praise. But human hearts beat with a universal rhythm. They thrill at beauty, love, and grace. Pain stamps its matching stain on all our bodies. Hope, no matter whence it comes, feels much the same. We are the people of Pangaea. Once one, we've staggered far beyond our home, pushed apart by forces we cannot remember, to distances that saved us from our fractious selves. and we have soothed our solitudes by stories we have told. They have whispered tales of privilege to us and stirred our hearts to fear those within whom our common blood flows. The time has come for our reunion. Far stronger than our differences, what makes us one, our love, our tears, our hungers, pulls us back toward each other. Our mythic, writhing stories, useless to the challenges we face, now start to fade. Their hold upon us loosens, and we are freed to cast new dreams into a future we will never see. May those visions shine humility before us, reverence as we ponder one another's lives. May they humble us by what we hold in common, teach us truth, and give us strength to hear it told. And may new legends call us forth to grandeur, to living large and wonder-filled and free. And may they build within us a pledge to seeing in all a sacred beauty only we, as the people of Pangaea, can name. May our challenges be answered only with compassion and respect. And may our future be filled with great thanksgivings offered by those who walk together in dignity and love. Only we can make it so. I would ask those of you who are closest to the lounge to bring the rest of our communion meal in from the hall. I invite you, as the food comes in, I invite you to offer yourself to someone. If you haven't had a piece of bread, you can give them the plate of bread if you want. But allow yourself to be offered the bread. So I'll present myself to Victor. Vincent, you're going to hold this out for me, and I'm going to take a piece from you. And then I'll hold it out to the next person. You'll take a piece from it. You can't eat that bread. Okay, sorry. I'll look for some gluten-free. That's just how we're going to do communion. I'm going to not do that for everyone, but I'm going to ask you to please make sure you get a piece of bread from someone in the congregation. So that we take communion that way. And if you like, you can dip it in one of the chalices before you eat it. Let us be in communion. Please come. Sorry, all of us need to get out there. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything goes out. Sorry. Yeah, all this comes out.
You have been listening to a podcast from West Hill United Church located in Scarborough, Ontario, Canada. These podcasts are made possible by the generous support of our listeners, volunteers, and members of our community. To donate, go to our website, www.westhill.net, and click on the Canada Helps button, or go to www.westhill.net/donate.